Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Hello, and welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. This episode, you're going to hear about this month's new releases in Christian romantic suspense. I hope you will enjoy hearing from your favorite romantic suspense authors as they talk about the background of their latest books.
And now you're going to hear from Dana R. Lynn about her latest romantic suspense, Amish Witness to Murder. So welcome back to my show, Dana.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.
So we're going to get started and focus on what's happening in Amish Witness to Murder. We're going to start with the heroine and her name. Why this particular name?
Well, I picked the name Beth because my daughter, she just got married last September. And when I was writing this and I was all wrapped up in wedding planning, well, her middle name is Elizabeth. So I thought, you know what, this book, I was really thinking a lot about Rachel, so I decided to make my heroine named after my little girl.
Oh, that's really sweet. Oh, that is really sweet. So what did your daughter think about that?
She thinks it's funny. She thinks it's funny. She says, well, at least if you had to name a book after me, at least I like my name. Since everybody's going to be out there.
That's funny. I know. Our kids don't always give us the, you know. Sometimes they say they say things unexpectedly like that. But that's funny. All right. So let's talk about your hero. Where did your hero grow up?
So my hero, Gideon, he grew up in a little town outside of, can I start that question over?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because for a moment I'm just like, oh, wait, where did he grow up? No, my hero Gideon grew up in a little town called Sutter Springs, Ohio. It's a made-up town, but it's a town that is a funny mix of Amish and English. It's an up-and-coming touristy place. So he grew up interacting with both the Amish community and the surrounding English community.
Ah, okay. Great. And so your villain, sometimes I really like our villains. They can be so interesting. But what's the last book or movie your villain watched or read or watched, I guess I should say?
So I'm going to use the pronoun they because I don't want to give away whether my hero or my villain was male or female.
Okay.
But the last book they read was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And my reasoning for this is my villain, they don't like to spend a lot of money. They spend an afternoon at the library and just picked up what looked interesting on the shelves for just when they had some downtime. And The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was something that had been recommended by a buddy years ago. So they had some time. They decided to read it.
Ah, I love that. Yeah, that's funny. So let's talk about the setting in this story. How does it move your story forward?
Well, in my story, first of all, I will mention that this is the fifth book about a family of siblings. So Gideon is the last of five siblings. So the setting has been around for a few books now. And it moves the story forward because you have to have, you know, this is where both the hero and the heroine grew up, they both have wounds that need to be healed. So while they are navigating their own territory, they're also coming to terms with things that have happened in the past. And some of those things are actually pushing them towards the final conflict, like the very beginning. I'm not going to give away too much because it's literally shown on the cover. But there's a barn fire. Elizabeth, that's her father's Amish auction business, goes up in flames. And it is not an accidental fire. It was deliberate. And her father is killed and she watches it happen. So that's where we begin. And as we go through, we're going to be keep coming back to it. And there are wounds that have to be healed. There are things that happened in the past that have caused a lot of tension and conflict between Gideon and Beth that they need to stay in that area in order to solve those issues.
Ah, yeah. Well, I love it when we can use the setting to, you know, to add that layer of tension and can bring closure in some ways as well.
Well, and plus, with it being an Amish setting for half of it, we've got a lot of areas where, like, there's not electricity, so they're really having to rely on their wits to because somebody is actively trying to kill them. So they have to rely on their wits. They have to rely on what they know about the land, who they can trust. And I don't know, I really find it challenging to write suspense, you know, intense suspense in an Amish setting. But I think that's part of the joy of it because it is so much of a challenge.
Yes. Yeah.
To always make it new.
So what was it about this particular story that made you want to write it?
Well, like I said, this is the fifth story in a series of siblings. So when I first proposed this book, it was kind of like, okay, well, I have to conclude. I have to get a story for all the siblings. But as I went through it, each book, I got to know Gideon a little bit more, and it sounds funny, but he is so not the character that I imagined when I started book one. In the first book, he was kind of a wise guy, kind of immature, you know, and then you get to realize that there's so much more to him. And I have been, ever since I started, I've just been thinking, wow, there's so much to him. I was going to give a little bit of a... Gideon is literally a genius. But he has had to hide that fact in so many ways because in Amish communities, you don't really want to stand out. So nobody... His family has kind of recognized this, but nobody talks about it. But I really enjoyed giving him a few scenes where he could really be himself and let that aspect of himself shine.
Ah, nice. So we're going to conclude our short time together with what's one thing you want readers to know about Amish Witness to Murder?
One thing I want them to know is the theme of my story is about, it's a second chance romance, and it's about forgiveness, and it's about letting God take care of the things that you are not able to take care of. Things that are too big for you, you can rely on God. He can always handle them.
Oh, that's great. I love how as Christian authors we can have those wonderful themes in our book. So thank you so much, Dana, for sharing about Amish Witness to Murder.
Well, thank you for having me.
I am delighted to be talking with Terry Toler about his latest book, 7 Year Rich. So welcome to my show, Terry.
Thanks, Sarah. It's good to be with you.
So let's talk about your heroine. How does she feel about love at the beginning of this story?
Well, Eve is, her name is Eve, and she's a young pastor's wife, and she's madly in love with her husband. And they're poor, they're just trying to make ends meet, but she's struggling because she doesn't really know what her role is as pastor's wife. It's set in a southern location in the Bible Belt, and she has all the problems of being in a congregation where she's so much younger than everybody else. But she and her husband's getting a lot of criticism, so she's really trying to stand by him and support him. But they're newly married, so she really doesn't understand fully love, other than she knows that she's just madly in love with him.
Ah, I love that. And so let's talk about your hero. What is his greatest fear in this book?
Well, his fears are sort of similar. He feels like he's out of place, like he doesn't really belong. The pastor of the church is his pastorate, and he was voted there on a vote of 33-1, so it's a very small church, and it's barely growing. They're barely able to make ends meet, and so he's dealing with a lot of self-doubt and insecurities. He's madly in love as well, and so he's wanting to provide for his wife. All of the things that her husband wants to provide for her, and all he can afford is a candy bar, and that's his way of surprising her, is bringing her a candy bar home from work. And so he's really struggling with the financial side of it, plus just his insecurity. He gets a lot of criticism for his sermons. They're too long. He has a lot of trouble with the really older people in the church who kind of run things and have run things for years and years and years. And so it's just a challenge in a lot of ways for him.
And you mentioned the story setting a little bit earlier in a rural area, I think is a small town. Why did you pick that particular setting for this story?
Well, I wanted it to be in the Bible Belt, so it's set in Georgia. I wanted it to be in a rural area, so it's set in rural Georgia. Kind of a small community of about 2,900 people or so. And so I wanted that type of setting where there's a lot of tradition, smaller churches that have been there for a long time, and it just seemed like Georgia was a good setting for me.
All right. Let's talk about the underlying positive message of this story. What is it? What is that?
Well, this young, poor couple win the biggest lottery jackpot in history, $1.6 billion. And so, as you can imagine, their life is totally turned upside down. They do go through some twists and turns because he leaves the ticket in his shirt pocket and his wife washes that shirt. And so the lottery ticket is destroyed. So they won $1.6 billion and then they realize that they haven't. And so they have to go through the process of going to court and getting a judge to rule that the money is actually theirs. And so when he finally does, the storyline jumps to 7 years later, and there's a lawyer's office signing divorce papers. And so the message of the story is about the challenges that they went through gaining that much money in such a short period of time, and then how the Lord brought them back together through all of that adversity to where they ended up saving their marriage. And so that's the underlying message.
And so what is the one thing that you want readers to know about your book?
Well, the book has the theme of romance running through it, but it also has the theme of suspense running through it. The main message that I really the book to convey is, and that's what I do. Motto is sort of, I write, fiction, clean fiction with a message. And what I really, the message that I really want to try to get across is how love can win in the end. And with love, you're going to go through a lot of adversity if you don't win $1.6 billion. But the message is 70% of all lottery winners lose their money by the time it's all said and done. And so that's sort of the theme. It's about how money can destroy your life and your marriage, your health, those types of things, but how God can use it for good.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing with our readers and our listeners today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to have Angela Carlisle on my show to talk about her new romantic suspense, Secondary Target. So welcome to my show, Angela.
Thanks, Sarah. Really glad to be here today.
Well, we're just going to get started because this is my quick take, so we have a short time together. And we're going to start with your heroine. And if she had or could have a pet, what would it be, and what is that pet's name?
So Karina has a German Shepherd, and she named him Houston as a nod to the area she grew up in.
Ah, and does Houston have a good role in this story?
He does. He adds some fun to it.
Okay. Pets often do. Pets often do. Well, let's talk about your hero. And I'm so glad you picked this question because I thought it was just a fun question. But what is your hero's favorite snack in this story?
So Bryce will eat just about anything with the exception of sardines. You hear a little bit about that in the story. But his favorite is probably sour cream and onion chips.
Oh, I mean, who could go wrong with sour cream and onion chips? I mean, do you personally like those?
I do. I'm not a big snacky person, so I don't eat them often, but I do enjoy them on occasion.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I've never been a big potato chip person, but yes, if I have to, I will pick those up, or the dill pickle ones. Those are good too. Anyway, let's talk about your villain. As a romantic suspense author, sometimes I really love my villain, really love my villains. But what is your villain's favorite song or musical style in this book?
So it might surprise readers a little bit, at least at the beginning, but he really enjoys show tunes, Broadway songs, soundtracks from popular musicals, even classic Disney songs. That would be his favorite style, his go-to.
Oh, I love that. That is so fun. Now I always have to read your book just so it's like, why does he like that? Okay, the wheels are turning. So let's talk about the setting of your story. If it's a fictitious place, did you base it on a real place?
I did. So the book is set in Kincaid, Kentucky, which is not a real town.
Okay.
It's based loosely on Falmouth, Kentucky, which is not too far from where I live. But Falmouth has a state park named Kincaid Lake. So Kincaid is a fictional sister small town to Falmouth.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, I like it how I've created a few towns, and it's kind of fun to to do that. Because we can, because we're fiction writers. We can make things up. Imagine
exactly.
That. So let's talk about the underlying positive message of your story.
Beneath it all, I'd say it's that the Christian doesn't have to walk through their trials alone. We're going to have trials. Obviously, that is part of life. But no matter how dark things are, we can trust Christ and know there is hope for the future, for today, and ultimately we can trust Him.
Oh, I love that. And you're right. And especially as Christian authors, that's one of the things that I love to infuse my books with, because we do write about, people doing bad things. there's danger and there's a romantic suspense. So the suspense part. But then we can have those wonderful messages that just resonate with biblical truth. So I love that. Well, we are almost out of time, Angela. Let's close with what is your book's tagline?
Secondary Target's tagline is "A Ruthless Murderer, a Deadly Secret, an Unbreakable Love."
Ah, I love that. Well, thank you for sharing about Secondary Target with our listeners today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Now I'm delighted to be talking to one of my returning guests, Terry Reed. She's talking about her latest book, Shielding the Innocent Target. So welcome back to my show, Terry.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Now we're going to start with the heroine, and this is one of my, I love this question, about whether or not, if she has a pet or could have a pet, what would it be and what would its name be?
So the heroine does have a pet in this book. It's actually a therapy dog for her son, who has epilepsy. And he's a golden retriever named Aslan from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And that's one of my favorite stories, and I picture that being Kenny's favorite story, the son in the book.
Oh, I love that. Yes, that's a great name for a dog. So,
yeah.
So listeners, feel free to steal that and name your dog Aslan, but that's a great name for a dog. So let's talk about your hero. What is holding him back from finding love in this story?
He has a really heavy sense of responsibility that keeps him from finding love. He really thinks that he should be the one to keep the world safe and that it wouldn't be fair to have a relationship. And that's something he's going to have to overcome through the course of this story.
Yes, yeah. That's a lot of responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
He would wear a Superman cape if he could.
Yeah, he would. He would need to, I think. So what about your villain? Why did you decide to make this person your villain in the story?
Honestly, as I was writing, I didn't really know who my villain was going to be. I had several people in mind, characters, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I was almost to about the 3/4 way point where I was like, oh, it's this person. Okay, let's go with it.
So that's you just kind of,
yeah.
So the story just kind of told you.
Villain.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that happens to me often. I mean, I'll kind of have an idea as to why this is happening in my books, but sometimes I'm not 100% sure who's going to be the bad guy. So,
yeah.
Always fun. It's always a fun surprise to us sometimes, readers.
Right.
What happens? For you, what was the biggest challenge in writing this book in the setting that you gave it?
Well, setting kind of changes through the story. It starts in Florida, and then the hero has to get the heroine and her son from Florida to Texas.
Mm.
And they have this big golden retriever, and there was just some issues with trying to fly. So they end up in a minivan driving. So they had to go through all sorts of different weather and terrain, and it was fun to use the different places that they stopped along the way and got stranded a couple times. The road washed out in front of them at one point. So that was challenging just to get a map out and look at the area and see, try to describe every different setting point.
Yes. Yeah. When we move them around, it can be harder to figure out where they're going and what's going to happen when they get there. So what was
right.
it about this particular story that drew you to write it?
Well, Lucas, the hero, appeared in my other book, Forced to Hide, and he was just a walk-on character because I needed one more U.S. Marshal to show up and help with the situation in that book. And I really liked how he showed up. I didn't really have a lot of information about him, but he just grabbed my imagination, and I thought, okay, he needs his own book. So there we go.
Yeah, well, that's as good a reason as any sometimes. So we're almost up, out of time with our short interview today, Terry, but leave us with what is the book's tagline?
A child under his protection and a hitman in pursuit.
Ooh, I love that. Well, thank you for sharing so much about Shielding the Innocent Target.
Sure, thank you for having me.
I'm delighted that Susan May Warren is back on my show to talk about her latest romantic suspense, One Last Chance. So welcome back.
Thanks, Sarah. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about your heroine. What did she want to be when she grew up, and did she actually become that person?
So we're talking about One Last Chance, and I love this story because my heroine is actually a cop. And she has always wanted to be a cop, but she's not just a cop. She's a serial killer hunter. And I love this because she actually, this was something that she's wanted to do since she was a little girl. She actually saw the victim of a serial killer when she was young. And instead of being freaked out by it, she was super intrigued. And she met one of the detectives that was researching the area because he came to talk to her about what she'd seen and everything. And she got into a mentorship relationship with that detective and a forensic researcher or someone that worked at the scene. And that just grew her interest in detective work. And so now she finds herself specializing in serial killers. And of course, it's a very dark thing. And that's part of the theme of the story is how does she pull herself out of that darkness and, into the light, so to speak. But it's a really, really interesting topic. Unfortunately, I had to do a lot of research about serial killers. So I didn't love that part, but I did enjoy writing her because she was so interesting.
Yeah, no, it sounds like interesting. I love it when we can give our characters such a rich backstory with the mentorship and everything.
Yeah.
But your hero, where did he grow up in this story?
So my hero is Axel, and he's Axel Mulligan, and he grew up in Copper Mountain, which is the little town south of the Denali State Park, and he grew up in Alaska. He is a Coast Guard rescue swimmer. Actually, he's an ex-Coast Guard rescue swimmer because he has this tragic past that happened, of course. But he's a fun guy. He really knows the area, and he's a kind of an adventurous guy. He loves the rivers. He loves being a sportsman. So he's a great character for Flynn because Flynn comes to Copper Mountain in search of a serial killer, and she kind of needs somebody that knows the land, and Axel's her guy.
Ah, I love it. And so that kind of leads us to the next question, Susan, which is, why did you pick this setting for this story?
Well, Alaska is a fantastic place to set a story, especially especially for a rescue team, right? Like everywhere you turn, there's danger. Like, usually I have a list of like, here are 20 dangerous things that could happen in Alaska in your story. Pick three, And so then, I'm able to pick it. I just have to make sure it's not the same ones every time because it's like fall off a cliff, find a bear, get caught in a river, this sort of thing. But I love Alaska for that reason. And then, of course, because Alaska is so vast, putting a serial killer there and then having our characters have to find that person is really, really intriguing because there are so many places for them to hide. So it became a great place for this hunt to happen because of the obstacles and challenges of just the terrain and the area up there. So, yeah. And of course, you've got all the ways that you can get our characters into trouble as they're searching for the serial killer in this terrain. So, so it was a great setting.
So why this story, though? I mean, you talked a little bit about, how the research you've done and how you love to set it, it's a continuation of a series in Alaska. But why this particular story? What made you want to write about this story?
Well, I was intrigued first with the concept of finding rescue over the radio. So I was watching one of the Coast Guard shows on Amazon, and one of the episodes had a guy, a rescuer, who was stuck on a boat overnight with one of the people he was rescuing. It was going down, and he'd gotten on the boat, and then they were not able to take him back up because of the winds. So he's like, I'll just stay here. And he stayed on the boat with the guy, and they communicated by radio all night long to shore, and so that they could keep track of these guys in the storm. And I thought, who is that person on the radio? And what would happen if it was part of the rescue team, but rather some random person who has a ham radio? And what if they really did do something to like save them and keep them alive, maybe sent the rescuers out to the right location later? And then my hero goes to find her, and what if she's not who he thinks she is? And so that set up the whole setup for the story as I tried to figure out what was this story and who is this person on the other side of the radio. And then from there, that's where the story kind of took off.
Oh, I love those little what ifs. I watch a lot. Yeah, I do the same thing, Susan. Watch a lot of them go, what if? And let's do this. And I love those little rabbit trails our minds can lead us when we plot our books. That is fantastic.
Yes.
Well, we are almost out of time. Yeah, almost out of time for our short interview right now. But what is one thing you want readers to know about One Last Chance?
I think that for both of my characters, they discover that they're not alone. I think that for, you know, that's kind of a theme as my hero's in the boat and he's like, I'm by myself and I'm drowning. You know, there comes this voice out of the darkness, so to speak. And for the same token, my heroine Flynn, later on when she's in a place of need, here comes the hero out of the blue. And it's just this idea that we are not actually on our own. We have, and of course it's a faith-based story, so we have God is watching out for us, but he does provide people in our lives if we're willing to open up our eyes and to reach out and to take the hand that's offered us. And so that's a little bit of the story. I have sort of a little bit of a Jack and Rose Titanic theme going on, but you know, we kind of argue in the story about, was there room on the board on the door for Jack, you know, and you know, this idea of that, did she really have to be alone, and you know what happened there. So anyway, that's kind of the idea, is that there are people all around us that are willing to get involved in our lives and care, and we are not necessarily alone. And so that was kind of the pervading theme of this particular story.
Oh, I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about One Last Chance today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Up next on my podcast is Megan Biesing for her latest romantic suspense, Flash Over. So welcome back to my show, Megan.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to start with your heroine, and you wanted to talk about if she could have a pet, or if she does have a pet, what would that be, and what is or would be the pet's name?
Well, Sophie runs a rescue for horses for a ranch, and so she has lots of horses, and she wants more of them, and all of them are equally loved, but some of them get more page time. One of them is Frank, and she hasn't named any of them because they're rescue animals. Frank is huge and white, and he causes a lot of problems at the beginning of the book. Daisy is her most dependable, and then Peanut is her favorite meal, and he creates some fun times ahead.
Ah, I love that. I love that. Those are great names. You must have had fun naming them.
I did. It was great.
Yeah, so let's talk about, but speaking of names, why did you decide to pick this particular name for your hero?
So Houston James was actually in another book. He was the brother to the heroine in Expired Hope, which is Macon. So when he got a chance to get his own story, I thought that was great. But I originally thought, well, if a parent named a kid Macon, they would probably name another child with a city name. And Texas is dear to my heart, so I just picked Houston, Texas as my name for the brother. So he got his own story in Flashover.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, I one of my current ones I'm working on, she all named him for Cars, which I thought was fun.
Oh, that's fun too.
yeah, Lincoln, you know, there's some fun ones in there. Okay, so what about the villain in your story? And feel free to use the plural pronoun if you wish. What does he or she love the most?
I find in this book there's like several overall villains, if you want to count even like the wildfire, even. I think as a whole, what I can say is they all love themselves. They don't care how they cheat or hurt people or how to get ahead and get money. They're just thinking about themselves and how to make themselves happy.
Ah, that can cause all sorts of trouble. That is so true.
Yes, yes.
So let's talk about the setting. I love how we can use the setting, you know, to move the story forward. So how does your setting move your story forward?
Well, the original town, which is called Ember, was created by Susan May Warren. It's in several of her other books, and they're all kind of connected. And so my ranch is right outside the city of Ember, and it's on a ranch, but it's surrounded by the forest in Montana, and it's basically, not just the city, but like the wildfire is what really makes the setting move forward, even when the characters are not quite ready to survive and run from a fire. But it definitely is the one that pushes the story forward.
Ah, yeah. So I love how we can use weather and other events to create even more danger. Yeah,
that's right.
So, as Christian authors, I love that we can infuse our stories with you know, with different positive messages. So what is the overall positive message of Flashover?
I think the overall message is you can't outrun God. This story goes along with the second verse of It Is Well, which is, though Satan should buffet, though trials should come, let this blessed assurance control that Christ has regarded my helpless estate and has shed his own blood for my soul. And Sophie is running, and in a way, Houston is also running from the Lord's plans and set his sights on his. And they both have to remember that God is the only saving path that we have. And I picked the verse, Proverbs 18:10, which says, the name of the Lord is a strong tower, and the righteous run to it and are safe. And we all need to remember that Christ is our foundation and our strong tower in this often really crazy world.
Ah, I love that. Very nice. Well, we are almost out of time, Megan, but let's close with, what is your book's tagline?
She never expected her second chance to show up in the middle of a wildfire.
Ah, that's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing about Flashover today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Next up, I have Elizabeth Goddard with her latest romantic suspense, Hidden in the Night. So welcome back to my show, Elizabeth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what did your heroine in this story want to be when she grew up? And did she become that person?
Yes, she did. She wanted to be an FBI agent and work in the arts crime division because of something that happened in her childhood. It was just her way to make things right. But when we begin the story, she's actually a rare book collector because of something that happened to her in the FBI. So she had to leave her career, but she's still keeping in the same vein. And throughout the story, she does end up redeeming what happened to her before that even drove her to become an FBI agent.
Ah, lovely. I love it when we can give our characters that growth and happy ending, right?
Yes, so, that's what we strive for.
Yeah. So let's switch to your hero, and where did he grow up?
Well, the story is set in Southeast Alaska, and he grew up actually people learn in book one, Cold Out of Day, that he was in Kansas. And when he was young, his father moved both he and his sister, Chief Autumn Long, to Alaska, Southeast Alaska, to the small town of Shadow Gap, where they could grow up with their grandparents. So he is in Southeast Alaska, and he became an Alaska State Trooper because he lived there.
Right. Well, let's talk about the villain. Why this person as your villain? Why did you decide to make this person the villain?
Well, this person has close ties to Ivy and her family, and there are a lot of hidden layers of things that they don't know about him, and going back to the past and relationship with her father that she doesn't know about, but everything comes to light, of course, in the story. And even though I don't want to give too much away. It's so hard, right?
Yep.
But he's very important to the family, very integral to her life. And he has to sometimes, you know, actually sometimes I look around and I'm like, who can be the bad guy? Who's the bad guy in the story, you know? So you have to try to pick someone that works, but at the same time will still be surprising to the reader. So He was, I think, is just a great villain.
Good. Right. Yeah. I always like to, when we can pick the, maybe the obvious but not obvious person. That can always be fun.
It's hard to talk about it, right? Because.
Yeah. Yes, it is. No, no, don't give anything away. So let's talk about the challenge to writing the book in setting in Alaska. What was the biggest challenge for you for this particular book?
Yeah, well, all three of my Missing in Alaska books are set in Southeast Alaska, but for the last book, I wanted to showcase another part of Southeast Alaska that I missed in the first two books, and that was Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve, because, you know, we need to have a glacier in the story. And so I had to do a lot of research on the very, very small towns that are like, or the small town that was the entrance to Glacier Bay. And it actually worked really well for the story because that town does not actually have police. They voted not to have police. And so, you know, hey, if I can take my characters to a place where they have to do, you know, be running for their lives or looking into investigating or whatever, and there's no police around. But, of course, we do have Alaska State Troopers who, that is their job, to cover all the rural areas. And I have that in my character, Nolan Long. So it was a challenge to get the feel of everything, the winter, you know, the way the characters feel about it and all of that. But I really, really enjoyed the research. It was wonderful.
Yeah, so why this particular story? Why did you have to write Hidden in the Night?
Well, for Missing in Alaska, for the each book I have something missing. Like the first book, there's a person who's missing because they choose to be missing. And the second book, there's a person missing that they go search for. And then the third book, I wanted there to be a thing that was missing. And I kind of threw that out to my brainstorming group. And they came with, you know, they just tossed out ideas, including a lost Jack London manuscript. And I was just all over that because I absolutely love Call of the Wild. And I believe that Jack London actually inspired me, in a way, his books, when I was growing up, to write more adventure kind of stories, and especially in Alaska. So, you know, that was just, it was just hit me that this is the perfect ingredient that I need in my story. So it all came together in Hidden in the Night.
Oh, I love that. So let's close our short time together, Elizabeth, with what is your book's tagline?
My book's tagline is Joining Forces with Alaska State Trooper Nolan Long, Ivy Must Battle a Blizzard, Sabotage, and the Worst from Alaska Winter as the search goes on. But every answer they find only raises more questions, and the danger to their lives and to the missing girl may only be the tip of the iceberg.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing on my show today about Hidden in the Night.
And thank you for having me. It was great fun.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammakerfiction.com.